Saturday, October 1st, dawned gray and rainy, and this was to be our weekend at Camp David. Jim Kane had spent the night with us, so I gathered him up and took him down to the swimming pool at 9 o'clock, and then just decided I would try Lyndon. Would he come? To my surprise, he said, yes, I'll be there in a few minutes. I took out the precautions of telling him that the water was a little cooler than usual. No luck. He seized on it and told me, you brought me down here in this cold water. If I get a cold, it'll be because I wanted to go swimming with you. He's a born tease. Mm. He and Jim and I discussed what may be a necessary time out sometime in November. And then a quick trip to the beauty parlor and dressed for the wedding, the last of the official weddings in the cabinet circle. Richard Wirtz to Margaret Ann Hickman. I went to Lyndon's office about 15 minutes before the wedding and began to pat my foot. He was in deep conversation with Katzenbach and Bob McNamara and Jim Reynolds about a strike. I finally extracted them all, and after waiting about 8 minutes, during which Lyndon completely changed his clothes, we all piled into the car and went in the rain to the Church of the Annunciation, arriving right behind two pretty bridesmaids in autumn colors, who went in clutching long dresses and umbrellas. It was a Catholic wedding. Peggy looked both beautiful and pixie, and Richard terribly earnest, with his young brother standing beside him as best man. Our working crew gathered up their briefcases left at the church door, and then we went down to the Army-Navy Club, being the first in line to greet our hosts and congratulate the young married couple. It was a medley of government and cabinet and young people I did not know. I saw the Goldbergs, and Lyndon leaned over and whispered, they're going into Camp David with us. Fortunately, both Camp David and I are elastic. The men kept standing in a corner, talking to each other, roping in someone else who might have another angle on that problem. I think it was a strike. And then, very soon, we were off to the White House, and a belated lunch of hot soup and sandwiches at 3:10. Lyndon and Katzenbach and Joe Califano and Bob McNamara, who looked wan and weary, and Gardner Ackley and Jim Reynolds and, I believe, Henry Wilson. It was an uninterrupted session for an hour. By that time, our guests to go to Camp David had begun to arrive. The usher told me the Rusk and Goldbergs and Gene Rostows and Walt Rostows and Colders and Mrs. Katzenbach were all in the yellow room. I slipped over to Lyndon, and we agreed that it would be best for me to go on out with everyone else, and he would follow with Bob McNamara and Katzenbach when he could. The Rusks and the Goldbergs got in with me, and we drove to the Pentagon helipad, and then all of us in one helicopter for a ride to Camp David through clouds and fog that broke intermittently to reveal the beautiful, lush landscape below. At first, farmlands, all neatly geometrical, with comfortable white houses and red barns, and then the Catoctin Mountains. And the further up them we flew, the more frequent became the brilliant splashes of crimson and gold in the green below us. Fall is just laying its hand on the mountains. It has not really begun at all in Washington. Dorothy Goldberg and Virginia Rusk and I were exclaiming at each new view, I a little bit nervously to hide the fact that what should have been a 30 or 40 minutes flight was stretching into nearly an hour, and I had the feeling that we were circling. Then suddenly I looked down, and there was Aspen and the golf course, and the ground was quite clear, and at 5 o'clock we landed. It's the most blissful feeling. All our cares are deposited at the entrance, and we are free. This weekend, I can say that only of myself, because it's to be a very busy working weekend. I had already made out a chart with the officer in charge of where to put everyone, and on the plane I told everyone their quarters, Hawthorn, a Witch Hazel, a Dogwood. Paul had already arrived with our luggage, and so I was quickly into some pants and flat-heeled shoes. And then, with Lyndon still not here, I lay down on the bed and worked for a good hour. I had made it very clear on the helicopter that I hoped everybody would do exactly what they wanted, all the women, that is. Whether it was lie in bed and read the whole time, or walk or swim if the sun came out, or bowl or watch a movie, or play bridge with me. A weekend like this is time to be free and not bound by any social necessities. About 6:30, I went up to the bowling alley with Elspeth Rostow and Mrs. Katzenbach and Mrs. Kohler, and we had an hour of bowling. Mrs. Katzenbach has a natural athlete's form, although it was a new game to all three of them, or so they protested. The commanding officer had fixed up Laurel as a sort of living room for all the ladies, so that we would not interrupt the men in their long seminar session. Lyndon had come in about 6 with Bob and Nick, and they were thrashing out their problems in that living room that looks down on a valley where one of the major Civil War battles was fought, and which itself has seen, its walls have heard, a good deal of history through Roosevelt and Eisenhower and Kennedy and now the Johnsons. We had good exercise, but not terribly good bowling. And then we went down to Laurel, where Virginia and Dorothy joined us, and we all had a drink, and we had a call from Margie McNamara in the hospital at Baltimore. It was only at lunch that we had learned she was in the hospital. Lyndon, with his quick reactions, had asked some flowers be sent right away. She was calling to thank us for them. Her voice sounded frail and far away, although she protested, "I'm just winding my clock." She and Bob have such strong spirits, their bodies do not quite keep up with them. She leads such an active life in every way, you would never think that she'd been a polio victim as an adult. Actually, we sat down to dinner at a much more prompt hour, just a little past 8, than we usually do. I, with the secretary on my right at the head of the table, and Ambassador Goldberg on my left, some 16 of us. Mm-hmm. It was an interesting dinner. An array of brilliant men and lively, interested, in some cases brilliant women. Ambassador Kohler said that it was in this very room that he had sat and listened to Khrushchev and Eisenhower. Was his visit a good thing? Yes, he thought exposing Khrushchev to our country had had a very good effect, and some of it had siphoned through to his. And what about now? Mm-hmm. As well as I could understand and summarize his feelings, these leaders have retreated more into themselves, and so is the country. There is less contact, and yet, he said, throughout the country, there is great curiosity, even admiration, certainly great interest in Americans. And never at any time in all his travels has he had an act of hostility against himself. It seems the contacts they do have are with the art and entertainment segment of the population, the writers. It was my first time to be with the Gene Rostars. He looks very like his brother, only more fine-drawn. I think with such a competition between government and business and the academic world, we are fortunate to bring him in. Elspeth Rostar glows in any company. She's a marvelous combination, a thorough woman and tough intellect. This group of men had gathered to talk about Lyndon's trip to the East, about the whole international situation, but their time had been cruelly stolen by an impending strike and the necessity to ward it off, and a flow of figures and alternatives and telephone calls on the quite different matter of a strike. When dinner was over, this time the men adjourned to Laurel, and I asked for a quick vote on which movie everybody would like to see. Unanimously, they chose Gambit, a suspense thriller about an art thief. The popcorn passed, and the Johnson-Bijou set up. At 10 o'clock, I slipped quietly away, with a brief apology for my idiosyncrasy, to watch a very good hour of Gunsmoke curled up on the bed. It is indeed an unfair division of labor. For hours, I've been doing things I like, things that are fun, and the men toil away. And then when it was over, I slipped back into the living room and watched the end of the movie, which was light and fun, of a style as new as pop art and vinyl dresses, and then to bed by midnight. The rain had stopped, and on our way up to the bowling alley, we had seen a beautiful maple like a flaming torch. In a week, much of the woods will be like this. It's a glorious part of the world.